You're listening to a Peak Media production.
And now, coming to you from the Windy City, it's The Daily Dime with your host, Tim Keller.
Welcome, everyone, to this Tuesday edition of The Daily Dime. Today is May 13th, and it is a beautiful day to talk about some sports, so let's jump right into it. All right, so we will start off, as usual, in the NBA again, where we had Game 4 between the Celtics and the Knicks last night in Madison Square Garden, and the Knicks would go on to win this one 121-113 to take a commanding 3-1 series lead. And I will say, though, Boston looked great early on in this one. They were shooting well. Their stars were playing great. Derek White was playing awesome. But the Knicks just kind of hung in there, and they were down by 11 at the end of the first, but 11 at halftime still. And then they really made their move in the third, where they were able to take a 3-point lead going into the fourth. And then they just held on to that for pretty much the remainder of the game as they end up winning by 8. And the big story out of this one, though, was the Jason Tatum injury. I don't think it was going to change the outcome of the game. I want to say the Knicks were up by like 9 when it happened with about 3 minutes left. But Tatum went down. I thought it might have been an ankle injury at first, but then upon further review, it looks like it may be an Achilles. So hopefully not for his sake. You know, you don't want to see that happen to anybody. Obviously a brutal injury, probably miss about a year if that's the case. And he was so, so good yesterday too. I mean, I've also given Tatum a lot of heat over the past couple of years. But he was fantastic. He had 42 points in his 40 minutes. He hit 7 threes. He was 16 for 28 from the field. 8 rebounds, 4 assists, 4 steals, 2 blocks, just completely filling up the stat sheet. And what was, you know, really carrying the team for a large portion of the night. And to see him go down, it sucks to see that. But the Knicks end up getting the win. And speaking of some greatness, I mean, on their side, Brunson was fantastic. I would argue that this was his best game as a Knick. He had 39 points. He was 14 for 25 from the field, 12 assists, 5 boards. It just seemed like every time that they needed a big shot, it was him coming up time and time again. Frankly, the rest of the starters played really well too, though. I mean, Bridges had 23, Cat had 23, Anunoby had 20. So really an all-around great performance from them. And you got to give them a lot of credit for hanging in. I mean, Boston was hitting so many big shots early on in this game. I thought they might run away with it like they did in game two. But like I said before, they just kind of hung around, eventually made their move, and they get the win. And now they're up 3-1. It doesn't look like Tatum's going to play, even if it's only an ankle injury. I would doubt he plays game 5 back in Boston. And so they're still a super talented team, and they're really deep. So, I mean, if there's a team that can afford to lose their best player, it might be the Celtics. But Tatum is still so effective as their number one option. And the way the Knicks are playing, I just don't see the Celtics winning this series. Now, maybe they win game 5, but it's going to be really tough for them to pull this out. So really tough to watch him go down. I think he's going to have an MRI today, so hopefully it's not as serious as it looked. But it did not look good watching some of the footage back there. So we'll get those results, and I'm sure we'll talk about it tomorrow. But really, really rough night for the Celtics. But following that, we had game 4 between the Timberwolves and the Warriors, again in Golden State. And the Timberwolves would win this one 117-110 to go up 3-1. It really wasn't as close as the final score appeared. Golden State kind of came back in garbage time a little bit when Minnesota really already had control of this one. And Julius Randle was fantastic last night. He had 31 points, 11 for 21 from the field, and so did Anthony Edwards. He had a great game too. He was also 11 for 21 from the field. He had 6 threes. There was a point, I guess it was in the third quarter, where he just went nuts. He was like 6 for 8. Overall, he had 3 threes, and that's where they outscored him 39-17 as a team, and just kind of ran away with this one. So the Warriors, they just really didn't get the effort that they needed from their stars. Obviously, Steph was still out in this one, but he only got 14 points from Jimmy Butler. I mean, he only took 9 shots. You would think he would be much more involved in the offense with Steph not there. He finished with 14 points. He was minus 30 in his 34 minutes. And then Buddy Hield only had 13 points. Pajemski only had 11. Draymond only had 14. The only real solid performance they got was from Kuminga off the bench, just like in game three. He was great again. He had 23 points. He was 6 for 13 from the field, got to the line a bunch. But just not what you need out of your stars in a game like that, which is, you know, what you got to feel like is a must win just to even the series and then hopefully get Steph back. But now they're down 3-1. I think they're going to reevaluate Steph now, but we still don't know if he's going to play at all. And so, yeah, really rough look for the Warriors. You got to think Minnesota's probably going to advance here and play the winner of OKC and Denver. But the other thing that I wanted to talk about that was huge news from yesterday was we also had the NBA draft lottery before both of those games. And the Mavs end up getting the top pick, even though they had super low odds. The Spurs end up getting the second pick, even though their odds were pretty low as well. And then we rounded out the top five with the Sixers, Hornets, and the Jazz. And actually, we'll just go through the rest of the teams really quick, too. So then at six, we had the Wizards. At seven, we had the Pelicans, followed by the Nets, the Raptors, and the Suns rounding out the top 10, who actually moved their pick. They had traded that to the Rockets, so the Rockets will pick at 10. Then we had the Trailblazers, the Bulls, and the Kings, and the Hawks in the 13th and 14th spot, who also moved their picks to the Hawks and the Spurs, respectively. So a few trades there at the end of the lottery, but those were the top 14 teams in order. But I will say, though, like, I have to admit, as I was watching the lottery coverage, I was realizing, like, I don't really know how this works. I feel like I have a good idea, but I don't really have a great understanding, like an in-depth understanding of how this positioning works, especially when they started talking about teams like moving up into the top four. And then ESPN actually messed up in their coverage where they talked about, like, oh, Philly isn't in the top four now. And then they said, oh, actually, we messed up. They are in the top four. Like, it was kind of all over the place. So I wanted to do a little bit of a deeper dive into how it works, because I realized, like, as a Cavs fan, my whole lifetime, they've either been, like, really, really good or really, really bad. So they've either, like, you know, the lottery has been a complete afterthought, or they've basically been, like, they've had the best odds. So it kind of made sense, like, where they were going to pick. I think they've picked first three times, or I guess like four times in my life now. Or they've been, like, you know, essentially a championship contender. So I really haven't had to dive too deep into it to figure it out, because they were on either end of the spectrum where it seemed to make sense regardless. So anyway, I'll go through the process really, really quickly here. If you don't care about, like, the technical aspects of this, then you just skip ahead like a minute or two. But anyway, the way that they do this is real quick. If you don't understand the lottery at all, like, the 14 teams that don't make the playoffs are all put into a lottery for the top pick. And it's your odds are, like, inverse of your record. So the worse you are, the higher the odds you have. I think it starts out at like about a half a percent up to 14% based on your record. And but the way that they do this is they only pick for the top four picks, and then 5 through 14 is just like the inverse of your record again. So you only have a chance to get within the top four, and then after that, it just goes by record. So the way that they do that is they have 14 ping pong balls, and 14 is significant because there are 1,001 different combinations of 14 ping pong balls, and 1,000 of those are assigned to each of the teams. So there's one combination technically that isn't assigned to anybody, but if that comes up, they just, like, pick again. And so to put it in even simpler terms, if you have a 10% chance, then you have 100 of those 1,000 combinations. And so they pick, you know, for the first spot, and then they pick for number 2, 3, and 4. If a combination comes up for a team that's already been picked, then they just redo it again. Or, of course, if it's that one combination, which would be very unlikely, but if that one that is unassigned comes up, they just repick. And so just to summarize again, they do that for the top four picks, and then 5 through 14 are again just by record. So basically what had to happen was Dallas was chosen first, even though they only had a 1.8% chance, and then the Spurs were chosen second, even though they only had a 6% chance, then Philly with 10.5%, and then Charlotte, who had a 14%, and then it just went by odds after that, or by record after that. So so we ended up with the Mavs at the top, and Of course, we had a ton of conspiracy theories after the fact where people were saying like, oh, the NBA basically forced the Mavs to trade their best player to our biggest market team. And then to reward that, we gave them the top overall pick. And then, you know, you heard people even making up other cases about the Spurs where, hey, they've been good for like 30 plus years where they've had these star players. Now they have Wemby. We need to give him a great supporting cast. We'll give them another great player at number two. And then Philly's a big market, so we'll put them at number three. Like, we've heard everything over the past, whatever, 12 hours or so. And I just, as I was looking into the technical side of like how this all works, they also mentioned a bunch of the other like safeguards and procedures that they follow to make sure that it's not rigged. And they literally like they measure each of the ping pong balls. They weigh them to make sure that nothing can be distorted there. They have a partner from Ernst & Young that is there. And they have even more procedures to make sure that everything is done fairly beyond that. And then you have a rep from each of the lottery teams. So there's 14 other reps in there from each of those teams, making sure that they're not getting screwed, and 14 media members as well. So there's a ton of eyeballs on this entire process, including third-party members. Like, there's no way that it's rigged. So for anybody saying that it's rigged, it's just not true. They're fun storylines, but it's just straight up not the case. So I don't want to talk about any of the potential conspiracy theories at all. But there are a couple other storylines that I found that are very interesting. The one that was probably talked about the most, besides being a conspiracy, was that the Bulls and the Mavs had the same record. So they had a coin flip to determine their like positioning within the lottery. And the Mavs won that. So they had the third position while the Bulls had the 12th. And because of that, the Mavs, like their combinations getting chosen, they end up with the top pick and the Bulls are still at 12. So it could have been flip-flop just solely based on that coin flip, where the Bulls could have been number one and they end up just kind of screwed here, I guess. So I thought that was interesting. Obviously, you know, being here in Chicago, a lot of other Bulls fans were very upset by that. But something that I came to the realization of this morning that I think is even way crazier and much more impactful is that I was looking at the first team that didn't even make the lottery, which was the Miami Heat. So the Heat, they went 37-45, but because of the play-in tournament that we've had, you know, which is just new over the past few years, they were the 10th best team in the East, but they won, you know, the first 9-10 matchup, and then they won the second play-in matchup as well to become the 8th seed. And they did that just to get historically swept by the Cavs, like the worst playoff, most lopsided playoff series ever. So they ended up winning those games. And you would think like, okay, like most teams would take that. Like you'd take a couple playoff games. Like why not? Like, you know, you get to be involved in the postseason. I'm sure it's more revenue for those teams, especially the minimum two games they get to play at home. But when you look at this bigger picture, they don't get to participate in the lottery, and the Heat weren't like the best of the bad teams either. Like they leapfrogged a few spots by being, you know, essentially the 10 seed in the East, but then coming in as the 8 seed in the playoffs. So when you look at the inverse order of the standings, the Heat actually would have had the 11th spot in the lottery, which was the spot that Dallas was in, that which got them the top pick. So if Miami would have just lost one of those two playoff or play-in games, then they would have been in the 11th spot. And assuming all things go the same, they would have had the number one overall pick. Now, what makes this even more interesting is they traded their number one pick for this season, or their first round pick for this upcoming draft, to the Thunder, but it was lottery protected. So because they made the playoffs, won the two play-in games, they made the playoffs, their pick is now not lottery protected and goes to OKC. So they went from what would have been the number one pick in the draft to not having that pick at all. Now they do have the Warriors pick at number 20, but just in terms of those, like that scenario alone, like everyone's talking about the Bulls and their potential, it's even worse for the Heat, I think. Like you won two play-in games just to get historically badly swept by the Cavs when you could have had Cooper Flagg and the number one pick in the draft, and now you don't have that pick literally at all. So I thought that was just wild when I realized that this morning. So anyway, that was kind of the craziness from the lottery and the rest of the NBA just in general last night. But I did want to run through some of the NHL scores real quick. So just real briefly, we had two game fours, the first being between the Canes and the Caps in Carolina, and then the second being between the Oilers and the Golden Knights in Edmonton. And the home teams won both games. So the Canes won 5-2 to take a 3-1 series lead, and the Oilers won 3-0 to take a 3-1 series lead, as both of them will head on the road for game five with commanding leads in both of those series. So anyway, that'll just about wrap it up for this Tuesday episode of the Daily Dime. As always, thank you for listening, and if you would, please consider following the show and rating 5 stars on Apple or Spotify or wherever else you may listen. We'll talk to you tomorrow. See ya.